Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I meet with military veterans to learn about their civilian career, what they do, how they got there, and advice to other veterans seeking to do the same. Today is episode number 249 with Chris Brzezinski.
I've used test prep as a way to put food on the table when we were getting our businesses going, but something you should really think about is, like, with your company, is there a skill that you have right now that you can use to put food on the table that is related to what your company's doing? Because every hour I spent teaching was productive in the sense that I fed my family, but it was not productive in the sense that I wasn't getting any kind of, like, byproduct benefit that I could use for my own business.
Well, my guest today invested in properties in undergrad and nearly 10 years later started two different companies that built on that experience. In this interview, we talk about how Chris used trusted advisors as a sounding board and how that led him to abandon his plans of pursuing a PhD to instead pursue a completely different career path. We talk about what it's like to pursue an MBA and Master's of Engineering Management simultaneously at a top-tier grad school. We talk about what caused him to leave a very comfortable career at Goldman Sachs and instead jump into the wild and unpredictable world of entrepreneurship. We also have a fantastic discussion about how to evaluate whether to start a company directly from active duty versus gaining more experience first. Special thanks to a user who left a great review on iTunes. The username is I Hate You So Very, Very Much, which is incredible. And he said, or she said, phenomenal resource. This podcast hits the nail right on the head. Justin's engaging and insightful interviews cross a diverse range of industry. And as I ponder whether or not to leave active duty, have helped reveal the uncertainty of transitioning to the civilian workforce. I recommend to all my active duty friends. Thank you so much to you and all of the 104 other people who have left positive reviews on iTunes. Greatly appreciated. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you will find show notes with a text transcript of today's episode. You will find links to every resource we discuss. You'll also find on our website more information about Beyond the Uniform's coaching program, where we connect you with one-on-one, individually assigned and professionally trained and certified executive and career coaches to help you figure out your next career move, whether that's staying in the military, getting out of the military, or you've been out of the military for a decade and are thinking about your next move. Check it out. And with that, we will dive in to my conversation with Chris. Joining me today in Old Town, Chicago is Chris Brzezinski. Chris, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thanks for having me.
So for listeners, I wanted to give you a quick background on Chris. He is the managing director of Bronson Lee's Partners, which factors delinquent tax receivables for municipalities. The company uses proprietary software to underwrite, lend, and service thousands of receivables and their underlying assets annually. Chris started Bronson Lee nearly 10 years ago. He started out at Notre Dame, served in the Army as a captain with the 82nd Airborne Division at Fort Bragg prior to earning his MBA and Master's of Engineering Management while at Northwestern University. Since his time at Northwestern, he's worked at Goldman Sachs. He's worked at Manhattan Prep. He's also founded and is chairman of another company called Vacation Rental Partners. And so maybe to start things off, Chris, if you were to talk to someone on, let's say someone who's coming from the Army or someone on active duty, how would you explain what you do for a living?
Yeah, so I'm in real estate, the big picture. And if you think about, like, Monopoly and Baltic and Atlantic Avenue, the kind of rougher properties in the board, we invest in those properties. So we believe in, like, helping communities, and we do so by finding the busted up homes and neighborhoods and getting them fixed up and back on their feet. We started doing that 10 years ago, and it's a little bit, you know, harder of an area. When people say they're in real estate, they first ask me, are you in commercial? Are you, like, working with offices, restaurants? What are you doing? I'm like, you know, we're dealing with typical scratch and dent type properties and fixing them, making them nicer.
And let's kind of rewind the clock and go to, take us back to you're in the Army, you've decided to get out. What's the transition like for you? And in particular, how did you, it seems like you went directly into grad school. How did you think about that?
Yeah, so when I was in, I had a degree in math, and I was thinking about getting a math PhD and becoming a teacher. And while I was serving and while I was in college, even, I'd always had these side businesses like making websites for people, working construction and renovation work. And even when I was going to get my math PhD, I was really passionate about continuing that and finding a way to work real estate on the side. And I had met a few mentors who were, older folks that were successful in business and academia or whatever. And they were like, look, all you ever talk about is this business stuff. You talk about the PhD as like something you're just going to do. And these other things are what you're passionate about. So maybe instead of getting a PhD, you should look at getting an MBA and take like a couple years while you're there to explore these business passions you have and figure it out. And that's exactly what I did. I made that decision to go to Northwestern, to the Kellogg School of Management, to get my business degree and kind of explore the entrepreneurial ideas that I had had while I was in the military, whether they be, investing in real estate, building websites, making different products. I finally kind of realized, hey, this is exactly what I want to do. And it's kind of a short story synopsis. There's a lot of like other people that I spoke to. I talked to a lot of veterans that had, I'd gotten in touch with at different business schools and math PhD programs to kind of reinforce that. So not just, old white haired folks that are giving you business advice, but also folks that had just recently separated within the past couple of years and had gone through kind of like the same mental calculus about what to do next to figure out what to do. And I highly recommend anybody who's thinking about separating to kind of try to find the same groups of people, folks that are similar to you that have been pretty far down the career path in a couple of different things you're thinking of doing. They're excellent at kind of giving you like a big picture view, and here's what I would have done 25 years ago. And then also finding people who just recently separated to figure out exactly what you need to do, beans and bullets style, to plan your separation and plan like if you want to go to grad school, how do you craft your application? Where do you do your test prep? What exactly needs to happen to achieve that near term goal?
I love that. I mean, I love that you have these sounding boards who are able to hear what you were saying. I think it's easier for an outsider sometimes to hear the inconsistencies in our story. And so, you're talking about this PhD program, and it sounds like people are saying like, hey, that's not, we're hearing the passion and the interest on this over here, and you're talking about this option B. Maybe you should look at option A. So I love that thought of getting those sounding boards. And I also really like your advice around connecting with people, who are at that grad school who can help you, or in that line of work who can help you. And certainly for listeners, that's the goal here, is to approximate that, just to give these virtual coffee chats. But hopefully you can take this format and do it on your own, of reaching out to veterans or with people with similar backgrounds who are in that career path or school or company or industry or functional role that interests you. And then, just picking their brain for 20 to 30 minutes to get a sense of, if that's right for you, and if so, how to go about it, because it's very different when you're actually at the place. Like we'll talk about Chris's own career path, but I can probably from friends approximate some things about Goldman Sachs. But if you talk to someone who's there right now, their advice might even be more relevant than Chris, who was there a number of years ago. So I really like what you're saying there, Chris.
Thank you. Yeah, that's exactly a key point too, right? Is like if you want to go work at Goldman, talk to folks that were there a long time ago, talk about why they've gone somewhere else, but definitely get it from the horse's mouth, someone that's not too separated from you.
What about, I mean, I went to business school. We've had a lot of people on the show who have been to business school, but I think you may be the first person I've had on who simultaneously was doing an MBA and master's in engineering management. Could you talk about what that was like? If that's a path you'd recommend, was it overwhelming? What did that look like?
Yeah, so I had just finished reading The World is Flat, that kind of like it's a book about economics. And it's all about how like you can start a business in Chicago and work with someone to supply you with product in China, and you can get marketing and advertising materials done by someone in Australia, and look how crazy the internet has made the world. You know, we've always kind of like had like an interesting macroeconomic world where things come together across the globe to like make a pencil. It's like Adam Smith's whole like invisible hand concept. But the book really emphasized how important in the modern economy engineering is to the American economy specifically. And given my background in like math and computer science, I was like, geez, I'm passing on this math PhD thing. I've just read this really inspiring book and I really didn't want to do it. Like if I'm turning my back on math and, you know, this science kind of like background, I kind of want to do that. But after I read the book, I was like, geez, I should jump in with both feet and try to do this dual degree program. So I actually was accepted at Kellogg as a regular MBA. Then I read the book and I called the dean's office, scheduled a call, and just asked to talk to the folks in the engineering dual degree program. And after speaking with them, was accepted into that as well. And it was not as challenging a transition as like the business school transition was, because I had been a pure math and computer science major in undergrad. I had no exposure to kind of like the academic components of business. So like when I was in the military until I got my last aide de camp job, I thought that like rucksacks just fell out of this, like there was a giant rucksack factory owned by the government and they just kind of like fell out of the sky when you needed them, or something goofy. Like I never thought about how there's this whole supply chain and acquisitions process that brings the right number of rucksacks to a unit that's going to deploy or train somewhere. So it was more challenging to wrap my head around the basics of accounting, corporate finance, some kind of like the more quantitative aspects of business, just because there's so much new terminology like debit and credit and a receivable and, accrual-based accounting versus cash-based accounting, like all this stuff that you don't really think about. It's not too hard to understand, but it's just kind of like a new language. And the engineering stuff wasn't that bad. It was like designing new products. It was optimizing supply chains, stuff like that. And it was more practical, hands-on type of engineering. So it was more fun, right? Like if you're kind of like a nerdy person and you've designed products or had that kind of inclination and you understand, math well enough, it wasn't anywhere near as heady as like the new business stuff that I was studying.
And, you know, I've had a couple people on the show from Goldman, so I don't want to dwell on that, but could you just kind of talk about the genesis? Because you started There's a lot of interesting things for listeners we'll get into about how Chris worked at Manhattan Prep to pay for his business and how he started Vacation Rental Partners as well. But with Bronson Lee, could you take us through the genesis of that idea? And I'm also kind of interested in that transition because, you know, in my view, Goldman is like the epitome of an incredible brand, absolutely incredible salary and there's like a very defined career path, and then, you know, it's almost like a 180 of jumping into the abyss of uncertainty, no pay. Like it's just such a big contrast. So where did the idea come from and how did that transition come about?
Yeah, so while I was in business school, we had my business partner and I had started investing in real estate, and we had started like a variety of other small kind of like hobby-esque business concepts. One of them was called Game Day Housing, where we were at first buying homes in South Bend, Indiana, near Notre Dame Stadium, fixing them up, you know, getting the homes ready to be rented by fans on football weekends. And then we platformed that, made a website out of it, and there's not enough time to talk about all the iterations that we went through with that, but the company still exists and it's now Vacation Rental Partners. And I've since exited as an operator and service chairman, and that team's doing really great things. And if you look at all the twists and turns it's come through, where it's at is amazing. It provides the main product is software that is provided to large-scale property managers like 1,000 homes in Tahoe to run their business. That means run their website, do all their back-end accounting, send cleaning people to homes to be clean when people check out, and then distribute their properties all over the internet world to Booking.com, Airbnb, HomeAway, etc. When we started, that little business was literally, hey, let's find this old abandoned house near campus. Let's get it fixed up. Let's get it furnished. And let's begin marketing it to alumni who can either stay in our home or they can spend $2,000 a night for like a 2-star hotel with dead cockroaches under the bed type place. And when I was at Goldman, that business was still smallish. We were just in the process of like taking a website that we'd built for our own properties, like 10 homes that we owned ourselves, and opening it to the world at large as a marketplace. And at this point, Airbnb didn't exist. If it did, it was like 20 bedrooms in San Francisco. So everyone was kind of like at the beginning of this sharing economy thing. One of the last homes we had purchased, so we got all this stuff going on. We're transitioning our homes that we own as football rentals for game day housing. We're transitioning that whole business to a website. At the same time, we're still buying homes and adding them to our inventory. One of the last homes we buy is a foreclosure. And like, we'll get into that, but that's where Bronson Lee comes in. We get this, like, we had been looking for foreclosures. Like, how the heck do we buy them? We don't know how to find them. It's 2007 at this point, and you call a bank and we're like, we're looking for foreclosures. Like, there's no such thing as foreclosures. The real estate market's red hot. You're crazy. And meanwhile, we're looking around and there's abandoned homes everywhere. And we're like, there's got to be foreclosures. So like that hunt for distressed properties is where Bronson Lee comes in. And then 2008 rolls along and I'm at Goldman. We've got all these side things going on. I'm like filling out forms with compliance to make sure that like my private investments aren't going to cause any problems with my job or any kind of conflict of interest with a client or anything going on with my work at Goldman Sachs. And I'm at Goldman Sachs 2007 to basically 2010. And you're right. Yeah. It was like, I got a call out of the blue when I was new at business school to go work there, from a headhunter and to go interview. And I was so excited. And I was excited for many months on the job, but what ended up happening was got these side businesses, they're growing, they're getting somewhat more complex, they're generating cash. And then I'm at work and every day, and it's the financial crisis, and I'm a brand new associate, and I go through 5 rounds of layoffs where people come into our giant floor. And they take out they disconnect all the phones, they disconnect the cables out of the computers, and they tell us all to go into a room. And you hear like people in one room over are all fired, and you in this room, you're still here. And we go through that 5 times, and my job steadily gets like more and more terrible because they're trying to keep people on and do all the jobs of everyone that used to be there. And I respect that, right? They're trying to make do with what's going on, which is, hey, the entire financial system is melting down all around us. We've decided to keep you folks on. Let's make it work. And I'm sitting there, and what I saw, which bummed me out big time, was folks had spent months training us. Like I'm seeing like military style training, like 6 months intensive. You show up at work at like 5:45, you leave at like 6:30. You sit in a room and you're like memorizing really important things. You're learning how to become a financial professional from really, really amazing Goldman Sachs employees that are like managing directors, VPs. They've got kids from all, and these folks have like left Dallas and Philadelphia or whatever to come to New York to train you. And they've lived away from their family for months. Right. And like Goldman's like a very mission oriented culture. And that's something that a lot of military people are drawn to because it's such an I think I've read Reading Michael Lewis's 5th
not fifth estate or fifth state. I can't remember the name of the book. It's a brand new one. Check it out. Just Google Michael Lewis and you'll find the name, but it talks about how in NASA, 85% of employees are mission driven, whereas like in the population is only like 15%. And at Goldman, in the military, it's kind of the same idea. Majority of people are mission oriented, and at Goldman, it's the same way. So that's why a lot of us come there. And when you see bad things are going down, you're like, we can do this. We can pull together and do well with like what we've got. But after a while, I had been so kind of like pushed into a position that I did not sign up for at all. And my businesses were going well enough that I was like, geez, you know, the pay cut would be painful. I've seen these people that have a mission focus that are senior leaders get laid off, and they've been laid off when the stock's at like 48 and they've had all their deferred compensation paid out at $48 per share when it was issued at $200 a share. So I'm like, geez, these folks were awesome people. They didn't make the cut. Their deferred comp they were counting on got discounted by 75%. That's a pretty hefty, you know, you're like, I'm okay making a lot less money than you're telling me I'm making per year if I collect it one day. And then at the end of the rainbow, I'm getting axed and I'm not getting that payment. I'm like, geez, that's a lot of entrepreneurial style risk, right? And then I had friends at Lehman Brothers and other banks that were kaput and gone, and they had entrepreneurial risk in the sense that like they had all this deferred compensation and it was at zero. They got none of it. And they had spent time away from family, working 100-hour weeks, all this stuff too, and none of that payment materialized. And for me, I was just like, geez, I've got this little entrepreneurial thing going. I've seen these people take entrepreneurial style risk and it didn't work out. And I was just like, maybe this is just the right time to do this. And that's exactly what I ended up doing. I went to talk to the managing partner of our office and I explained to him, my reasoning about why I wanted to leave and go explore these kind of like hobby style businesses we'd started on the side that were now generating some sufficient cash to pay for our, our lives and put food on the table. And they, like, to Goldman's credit, they were like, you're crazy. Just the answer is no. You can't quit. You're an idiot. You have a brand new baby. Just stop it. And, I had to speak with the partner that ran our office. I had to speak with the partner that ran our division, the investment management division. They gave me like a month to think about it. Then I had to speak with folks again. And, at the end of all, they supported me in my decision and I moved on and then, you know, had a very, very hard year, but, we've made it through it. And, it was hard, but like, there's a lot more to say there making the transition, but you kind of got to like think about what's making you happy. And I think the big thing for me was taking away all the stuff that like I saw that was giving me like feedback to my decision. The main thing that happened was I had taken the job at Goldman because it was entrepreneurial and I was going to be able to build a business within the firm. It was in private wealth management where you can kind of like manage money for wealthy individuals, foundations and nonprofits. Right. And it's mainly like a business development role that once you get business, then you can manage money. And what happened was the firm decided to transition from associates building their own businesses to associates being like investment banking associates and going to work for a team, and just supporting the team. And that's not what I wanted to do at all. I would have gone to straight investment banking if that's what I wanted to do. And at first, it wasn't the end of the world. I kind of fought with the leading members of the division about it all the time. And I said, there's a way to get a waiver. Can I just go do this? I understand it's going to be hard, et cetera. They wouldn't give it to me. And I tried to buckle down and make it happen. And what I did was I worked for the team during the day, and then at night I would work for myself, and I would go out and network and still try to build my own book of business. And that's something that the partner that ran our office encouraged. And I thought that was, you know, made sense to me. They still want you to try and get new business. Times are tough. People are fleeing banks, et cetera. What really kind of pushed me over the edge was I did all that, and I brought in a prospect with $250 million of assets, which is like a very big prospect in the private wealth world. And he was going to pick us or another firm. And I'd done all this while working for my team and like doing everything that they needed done. And then also innovating and come up with cool problem solving ideas for them. And they were just like, oh, you know, that was a lucky meeting or something like that. And I was just like, all right. I already was thinking of leaving, but like now that like, or I wasn't happy, but now you just said that, like, now I feel like I just drank battery acid and my stomach is just like, I hate it here. And I asked the team, I kind of let that slide. And then the next day I was like, you guys said this, it bothered me. What I think we're going to win this business. If we do win this business, like this is something that as an associate, if you win that business, you're like already like you're on commission, you're doing great. The firm's very happy. Everyone in your business unit's going to get a voicemail about how Chris brought in this giant whale of a client, and everyone should, you know, give him a high five when you see him or whatever, right? That's usually a big deal. And they were just like, oh, nothing's going to happen. You'll still work for us and we'll figure out something when you're, you know, after like year two. And
oh, I was man. Like,
all right, this is definitely not going to work.
I mean, it so sounds then, like, cause yeah. at that point you're like, okay, this is not any more secure than starting my own company. It's not any less intense than starting my own company. And the upside is not even there in the way that I thought it would be. So it's like, it seems like at that point, it's like, why not put the same effort working for yourself where you're going to reap the rewards of it? And it doesn't seem like it's going to be any riskier.
Right. Yeah. Early. Yes, exactly. So like when you're young and naive, yes, you're like, it's not going to, that's exactly how I thought through it. You know, it's not as simple as that, as I've learned. It got me over the, you know, got me in the pool, if you will.
And, you know, it seems like a lot of the idea was supported while at Goldman and while in business school and grad school. But I'm just kind of curious, as you look back on over, you know, 10 years of running a company, could you have done this without an MBA? And could you have done this without Goldman? I ask just because I'm thinking of, I know a lot of listeners who are on active duty aspire to start a company. And I imagine one of the dilemmas they face is, do I do it right away or do I get some experience and kind of credentials in the civilian sector first?
Oh, that's such an excellent question. And I think, let's answer a few questions. So you asked about like, could I've done this without MBA and without Goldman? And then just like this general idea about credentials. So could I have done this without business school and without Goldman? No, like my line of work is so financially focused in terms of like a need for capital that without that, understanding of like corporate finance, different security structures, like the difference between preferred equity, mezzanine debt, just traditional debt, a warehouse facility, line of credit, whatever. No way. Like that would have been, I don't know. I would have needed like a partner that could just handle all that, or just have hired somebody. And I mean like intimately understanding. My personality is such that like if I don't intimately understand something, I go out and study it. So that would really suck. And then the Goldman thing just adds credibility in terms of when you talk about like financial partners, they kind of get that, hey, yeah, you worked at Goldman Sachs for a couple of years and oh, look at the years you worked there. I think you understand your way around basics of finance, and then we're going to kick the tires on the rest of your CV and your knowledge about this specific thing you're doing, but it just, it helps in terms of if you're going to do something where you have to go raise a lot of money from credit partners. So I'm not talking about like VC people, like you want to be an Uber and raise money from venture capitalists. It's a whole different kind of money raising experience. But if you want to work with bankers that are providing debt and that kind of cash, it really helps to understand corporate finance in and out. And it helps to have that experience with like a Goldman Sachs type brand. Now, in terms of like what experience is helpful to anyone, so like say you're on active duty and you're a pilot or you're a grunt or you're a medic, whatever you are, right? And you want to make an app, you want to go into flipping houses. It's like, you're like, I have no relevant experience in that area, but I'm passionate about it. That it's not a deal breaker that you don't have relevant experience at all. Like you can get it very quickly, but I would recommend trying to get it from someone else who will pay you to get that experience, right? So like I got paid by Goldman to learn a lot more about finance. So like go to finishing school, and learn how to put together a pitch deck and talk to investors about, risks and where their money will go and when they'll get their money back. How to prospect investors, like find them, pitch them and close them. And that's very helpful, right? If you want to flip houses, I have friends that I served with that ask me all the time about, like, you know, my buddies and I are firefighters now. We got out a few years ago and we want to flip houses. So where do we even start? And there's so much to that, right? There's like, where's your capital going to come from? Who are you going to use to sell the property? Who's going to do what to fix the place up? And it's kind of like early on, if you could scrabble together a team, which we're really good at as veterans and folks who've served and folks who are serving, right? That's what you need to do. And you need to accept that maybe early on, you're not starting your business day one and hanging a shingle on the door like Chris's house flippers, but maybe you're just getting that experience. And that needs to be your near-term objective. It's like, how do I build up the requisite experience so that when I hang my shingle out there, like I've got the skills I need to succeed, or at least to find the people to round out those skills that are needed to make the team successful. And that's something that like early on we were building tons of technology and I thought I had enough technology skills to like find people. And I kind of did, and that was enough, but I really wish that like I had as much technology, actual like coding and building apps skills that I have today, when I got started. And I'm used test prep as a way to put food on the table when we were getting our businesses going. But something you should really think about is like with your company, is there a skill that you have right now that you can use to put food on the table that is related to what your company's doing? Because every hour I spent teaching was productive in the sense that I fed my family, but it was not productive in the sense that I wasn't getting any kind of like byproduct benefit that I could use for my own business. I saw how a really well run organization is run. I think Manhattan Prep is a great company. It was eventually acquired by Kaplan. I was one of the first few instructors that was hired there. And I think you can learn a lot of things about organizational excellence, but you kind of already are getting that from exiting from your time in the military. Like as much as we think there's a lot of things that need to be fixed about the military, there are a lot of things that are pretty darn amazing that even get taught at business school about the military. So try to find something that is a hard skill that you can practice if you're just going to go out and start your own business right away that makes you money, that is either like you're making money for your business that pays you right away, or if you can't do that, at least like the thing that you're doing for your business and for others is like a side hustle, side gig, consulting gig, whatever, those two things are related. And if you really, if that you can't do that, listen to me, you can still be successful. You can still drive for Uber. You can still teach on the side. You can give blood, whatever you got to do to put food on the table. You're just going to get a lot less sleep. And that's the way it's going to be.
Yeah, I love that. I love a lot about what you just said, but I think that's such great advice. It's like, one, I think you're a good example of someone who had a job and then also had the test prep to be bringing money in. So you're able to buy yourself time and room to do this Herculean effort of getting a new concept, a new company off the ground. And but I love what you're saying about, man, like the home run is if you can have that job also be giving you a skill set that's going to be directly applicable to what you're doing, and whether that's in the same industry or whether it's gaining sales expertise that you know you'll need or some sort of programming expertise that you'll need. That's just the judo move that makes all of this so much more efficient, because then not only are you buying yourself some runway, but you're also getting really valuable experience that's going to directly help that company. And one of the questions I had for you was, you know, you alluded to it, but could you share with listeners just a little bit more about what that hard first year was like? Like, what was so difficult about the first year of starting business?
Oh, man. There's like that goofy burn the boats phrase with like Viking raids. Like, you land ashore and you burn the boat and you're here. So we did that in the sense that, like, we took all of our cash that we had saved up, my wife and I, and we put it into the real estate investment arm, Bronson Lee Partners. So we had like very little cash available. We left 6 months of living expenses in a bank account, which, you know, we were fortunate to have, from the time that I served. I basically like banked everything possible, and invested it and traded it. So, you know, that's where we had the money to start our business. And that's where we had money for, you know, basic cost of living. And at the time, you know, we had our oldest daughter only, and she was like a year old. So babies at that point are not that expensive. They're pretty reasonable, and you can get by with ramen noodles or whatever and just rent pretty well. And in a city, which is nice, like you can get public transportation. So, might be more expensive for rent, but a lot of things are much more affordable. So we also decided, geez, if this doesn't work, we're not going to leave this with like $40,000 of credit card debt or something like that. So we cut up our credit cards. And that was a little bit scary because we're like, we're not going to do this where this doesn't work out at the end of year one. We've blown through all of our savings. We have no cash available. I've got student loan debt. And then, oh, by the way, you've got like this huge credit card bill. So we burned the boats. They were gone. And in that first year, I had told myself, like, here's how much money the company's going to be making. Here's how much I can get from test prep. And here are our expenses. And this will all work out. And in reality, what happened was we started to grow our business, but Game Day Housing was like the main cash generator that we were trying to grow, and it did grow by, you know, more than double. I think in the first year, I think it like tripled. But the thing was, we were trying to get it to grow 10x in like per year. And what really screwed up our growth was we were predicated on this business model of people are going to spend $2,000 a weekend to rent a house near campuses across the country. And the first year that I quit was like 2010. And at that point, like, luxury spending had fallen off a cliff. If it wasn't like food in the cupboard, gas in your tank, people were not spending money. And we saw that show up in 2010 when we had this algorithm that would like scrape hotel websites and look at the average nightly rate for big game weekends and then spit that out to our clients to tell them, here's what we think you should be charging for your house for this rental, right? So like, I was comparing the hottest weekends from 2009 to 2010, and at first I thought there was something wrong with the code because it said like to charge like 90% less than the year prior. And I go and start manually looking up these game weekends, and sure enough, like rooms that were like $1,000 or $1,500 a night with a 3-night minimum stay the year prior were now $75 a night with like no minimum night stay. And I was just like, oh crap, this is not good. like what's going to happen? And what's crazy is in the markets where we had gotten started, you know, had some traction for 1 or 2 years, we still grew crazy growth, like 3-5x. It was incredible. I think like in Texas A&M, for example, we had like 7 houses the year prior that were available for rent and like, I don't know, 15 rentals. And we grew to like 112 homes for rent. And it's some just absurd multiple in terms of rentals. But places where we had no exposure, there was no growth or very little growth. You know, we're talking like half a dozen homes or something. And it's mainly because what had happened is we had all these people stay with us, and, you know, 8-10 people, mainly all different couples, going to their own bedroom in these homes, and they would come back and they would tell all their friends about us, and they'd be like, this is a way to save money as opposed to staying in a hotel. The economy's down, and if we had reached some tipping point with former guests, they would tell enough people and people would come back to our service. But in terms of like getting new people to discover us in a market where we were brand new, people would just go to like the hotel website and they'd see $75 a night instead of $1,000, and they wouldn't look for an alternative. They wouldn't look to like stay in a house. They'd just go to the hotel. So that business didn't grow as much as I had hoped. Manhattan Prep, where I had taught during grad school, like 6 hours a week, I needed to like start teaching like 12 hours a week to make ends meet. And I called the CEO when I decided to go back, and he's like, look, I can promise you 3 hours. And I was like, we're going to need to get that to 12. It's like, whatever you need me to do, I'll do it. And for a few months, like we did not have, I was at 3 instead of 12. So after like 4 or 5 months, that with like the housing business not growing as fast as we needed to, 3 hours instead of 12. And then, oh, by the way, then we have like, I filed my tax return. I thought I was going to get a refund. For whatever reason that year, the government decided to delay that by like 3 months, so I didn't get my tax return. A property that we sold where we had a nice little gain that should have put some money in our pockets and like funded us for like 3 months of living expenses. That was supposed to close in like February, and it was like April and it still hadn't closed. And in that first year, I just remember telling my wife, I was like, all right, this like cash account that we have for our living expenses, it's at zero. We have literally nothing. I've just paid our rent, and we don't have our tax refund coming in when we plan to have it come in. This house didn't close when it's supposed to close. I'm still only at 3 hours. There's no way to get more money. Please trust me that next month we will get our refund, that we will get this house to close, and we're going to have plenty of money for a few months, but we can't spend any money. And I remember she's just like, opened up the cabinet to the kitchen. She's like, got it. I'll make this work. And like, she did. And then, you know, sure enough, we got the things closed. We got through the refund. We got the refund from the government. And I just started emailing Manhattan Prep like every day. What else you got? What else you got? They're like, drive 40 miles to go do a dog and pony show about why people should choose Manhattan Prep. I'm like, yes, done. Can you teach from 12 midnight to 3 o'clock in the morning people in Hong Kong? Yep, you got it. Like what? Like oh, anything that they would give me. And then eventually, you know, I just worked so hard there. I wrote hundreds of questions for the adaptive exams that students pay to take. I wrote textbooks. I did whatever I could do to get to a point where they're like, no, Chris is like a preferred teacher. We try to give him like 15 to 20 hours of work a week. And that's what I got. And it worked out. But that first year was just like, it was more just like the terrifying prospect of things not working simply because I couldn't generate enough cash to pay to put food on the table mm-hmm. without like dipping into credit cards and stuff like that. It wasn't so much like the work was hard. It was very crazy trying to figure out what are we going to do to like keep the company growing and like do all these things. But it was more just like, how, where's food going to come from tomorrow? Like, how's that going to work? And then, oh, by the way, it's the Great Recession. Like if this doesn't work out, like where are we going to go? Like who's going to hire you right now? Like you're an idiot. You left a really good job and no one's hiring for anything right now.
Oh my God. Well,
yeah,
that sounds insanely intense, but I imagine for listeners that gives you a glimpse into an entrepreneurial journey and just kind of the craziness that involves. I know we're almost out of time, but I always like to make space for the last question, which is what have we not talked about today that you want to make sure listeners know before we wrap up?
Yeah, so I think something they said earlier really bears repeating. And that's this like idea of who you are now and who you want to be is simply separated by time and effort. And you hear this all the time from people, but if you're in the military now or a veteran of any kind of like tenure, like you just got out years ago, this should be obvious to you, right? Like if you're a SEAL now, you weren't there at some point, you weren't one and you wanted to be one. If you're an aviator now and you weren't one, at some point you wanted to be one and it took time and effort to get you there, right? And something kept you going and you've got to just find what that is that's going to keep you going. If you want to be an entrepreneur, if you want a job at like a firm like Goldman Sachs, if you just want to like get out and do anything that isn't what you're doing right now, you got to figure out what that's going to be to sustain you. And all it's going to separate you is a little bit of time, a little bit of effort. And we're good. Folks who've served are good at staying on azimuth and not giving up. And if you can hold on to that, you're going to get there. Like it's been 10 years and I'm still not necessarily where like I wanted it to be in terms of like business, but I'm still on azimuth. I'm still charging ahead. I'm still figuring out more about myself. And I'm still every day just like redirecting and recalibrating and figuring out like here's where I am now. Where do I want to go? It's just going to be a little bit of time and effort and I'm going to get there. And I just got to keep at it. And that's, I think we're naturally good at that. And maybe that's like kind of like worthless to tell all your listeners. But I think when I know for a fact, when I was separating, I was like, rucksacks fall from the sky. No one would ever want me to go to their business school. I'm an idiot. Like I didn't do as great as like the average GPA on this business school's website. I don't belong here. Why would a firm like Goldman Sachs hire me? Like, why would someone listen to a 27-year-old guy teach them about test prep? These people that are paying for test prep are like my age. Like, why are they going to listen to me? And at the end of the day, you just got to look yourself in the mirror and do what you've been doing the entire time you've served and it'll work out. And I know it's a little bit like, Stuart Smiley or whatever from Saturday Night Live, like you can do it and I love you or whatever. Like, no, like it's goofy, but you got to just put your head down and know that it's just a little bit of time and effort to get to where you want to be.
I love that because I think that's something that every listener, regardless of the career path you want to go on, that what you're saying is true. It's just I think that most people who serve in the military have persistence and tenacity in spades. And so, you know, just combining that with like you had indicated earlier, with, you know, some sounding boards of people, making sure you're headed in the right direction, and then just assume things are going to take 10 times more work and 10 times more time than you expect at the start, and keep on heading in that direction, keep moving forward. And for listeners who've listened to the episode I did on the book The Slight Edge, that's a great one to listen to. It's just that thought compound interest, the thing that makes people into millionaires. You can apply that same principle to anything you want to learn or anything you want to do. Just consistent, steady efforts in the same direction over time will pay massive, massive dividends. So, Chris, I appreciate your time speaking to us today and sharing a little bit about your journey. And I know this will be helpful for not only listeners interested in entrepreneurship, but just anyone looking to do something great in their career. So thank you for your time today. Well, thank you so much for listening and for supporting Beyond the Uniform. Beyond the Uniform is produced and edited by me, Justin Asiri. Our staff is entirely part-time. They do this on nights and weekends out of the goodness of their hearts to give back to the military community. Our director of outreach is Steve Bain, who relentlessly books guests, finds sponsors, puts together our newsletter, and thousands of other critical tasks every single week, all behind the scenes to keep Beyond the Uniform running smoothly. Our editor is Kathleen Dillon, who listens to and transcribes every single episode to help out those who don't have the time to listen to the show. It has a major impact on our site's SEO value, which helps people find us through Google. Our data analytics and insights advisor is Andrew Woolridge, who pours over the data each and every month to help us better understand how to best serve the Beyond the Uniform audience. Our digital production work is done by Michael Cummings, who puts together custom artwork for every episode. If you're enjoying Beyond the Uniform, the best way to help us out is by telling your friends and fellow service members and veterans. iTunes reviews, believe it or not, have a big impact on getting the word out as well. So if you have a chance to leave a positive review, that is greatly appreciated. If you know of a business that would like to get their product or service in front of a military audience, we are always on the lookout for sponsors, which helps us subsidize the cost of putting this show together. And if you haven't yet signed up for our newsletter, you can do so at beyondtheuniform.io. We send out a newsletter twice a month, and it is a treasure trove of helpful information for your civilian career and transition. And be sure to check out our coaching program, where you can be connected with a subsidized professional, certified executive and career coach to help you in your career decision making. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back next week with more stories from military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.